Welcome back to the Ryer on YouTube channel, where it is time once again for Second Helping, the show of choice for fans and followers of the number one league in all of collegiate athletics, the Southeastern Conference. I'm Travis Ryer, joined by my longtime great friend and college football analyst, Mr. Brent Beard. Brent, most recently, doing his great work for First Coast News down in Jacksonville, Florida. Brent, also a voter for the most prestigious individual honor in collegiate sports, the Heisman Trophy. And Brent, after a little bit of an opportunity to collect ourselves, to catch our breath, it is here. Just a massive weekend in the Southeastern Conference between the Friday games, the Saturday games. SEC, as is typically the case on an annual basis, caught a lot of grief last weekend for some of the scheduling. You know what that is, though? I think that's just a lot of frustrated college football fans in general around the country.
Yes. Yes.
Because the SEC doesn't carry the load again, you know, yeah, in late November. Right. So folks get frustrated. You know, they want to take it out on the SEC. Well, maybe have your league pick it up a little bit. You know, maybe another league could do what the SEC does. And by the way, we're going to have 9 conference games next year in the SEC.
Yes.
So maybe that'll help some of those folks get through that rough match.
That's a great point. And the thing we don't know is, at this point, the league is, as you said, playing on going to 9 conference games. But what I'm hearing is this frustration from the SEC that, okay, why are we going to 9 conference games if we're getting a raw deal and maybe not getting a team or two in that we thought should be in? So what do we do about that? Should we stay at 8 or go to 9? I mean, at this point, I guess they're obligated to go to 9, but Trav, it's an interesting question they raise.
Do you think the selection committee wouldn't mind a couple of these SEC teams losing this weekend?
No, not at all.
To make that job easier after conference championship weekend. Mm-hmm. You think maybe some of those folks wouldn't mind Auburn beating Alabama? And, oh, by the way, maybe Tennessee go ahead and beat Vanderbilt too?
Yes.
Because the SEC right now looks like a lock for at least 4. It's where that fifth team comes into play, where there could be some real issues when we get to Selection Sunday. But first, we've got so much to look at for this upcoming weekend. As always, we're live here on Ryer on YouTube. We appreciate you jumping on board with us. If you haven't subscribed to the channel as of yet, go ahead and hit that subscribe button. You'd hit us with a thumbs up, a like. That would help us out tremendously as well. Brent, what we'll do is we'll start right there on Friday. How about this one to get us going? At noon Eastern on Friday from Starkville, Mississippi, the Ole Miss Rebels and Lane Kiffin, at last check, will take on the Bullies with everything on the line for Ole Miss. This is one of those games, too, kind of like Auburn and Alabama and Tennessee and Vanderbilt, maybe to a lesser extent. Ole Miss, I think, is going to be under the microscope for a number of reasons, because we're supposed to find out something more definitive as it relates to Lane Kiffin by Saturday, I guess. But how do you think this could impact that Ole Miss team, if at all? I've got some thoughts on that. Wanted to hear yours first.
It could. They've got to be pumped a bit to play Mississippi State. And State, Trav, as we know, really about what, mid-season? Well, I know they lost a lot of games in a row, but, I mean, they gave Texas all they wanted to and more, taking the game into overtime. And frankly, State has shown some real improvement this year, all in all. So probably in some ways it may be good that this game is one of the early games. And we're used to seeing it on Thursday night. If people are wondering where it used to be, that's where it used to be. But the unfortunate part of this is so much has been said and about where Lane Kiffin's going to go. Is he going to stay at Ole Miss, which I don't think he does? Is he going to LSU or is he going to Florida? So, and much has been said about the LSU situation. So, as we seem to always do, Trav, the SEC is in lockstep with each other. Cousins always finding on the field and off the field. And I think we've got another one of those situations here.
Yeah, you know, I think for Mississippi State, it's interesting. The player, student athlete, they still refer to it as, which is kind of
Yes.
comical at this point. The student athlete availability report moved up
Yes.
a day this week because we have Friday games. So we just had one of those drop here in the last few minutes for this weekend's game. And I see Davon Booth, the running back for Mississippi State, listed as out for the first half. Apparently, a disciplinary matter
Yes.
or an issue that he's going to be dealing with. Otherwise, these teams look to be in pretty good health and at this point in the season, relative to
Yes.
who's available still at this point in the season. This would be huge for Jeff Lebby, no doubt about it, to knock off Ole Miss in an Egg Bowl and cause the issues that they could for their in-state rival. But look, Ole Miss has gotten to this point. It's really weathered some storms. You think about what might have been if Ole Miss had held on in Athens, but still in a
Yes.
great spot right here to perhaps host first round college football playoff game. Ole Miss still right with an outside chance to make it to Atlanta. It would need, I think, both Alabama and Texas A&M to lose this
Yeah.
weekend and then beat Mississippi State. Now I think you could have maybe, I guess, an Ole Miss Georgia matchup. But all things considered, Ole Miss a 7-point favorite. I'll say this too, there are some home dogs this weekend in the SEC that might have some pretty sharp teeth. Will it be the
Yeah.
Bulldogs of Mississippi State? Not ready to go there yet. I think Ole Miss gets the job done, and then we sort of hold our breath as we await word from Lane on his future.
And by the way, as far as the game is concerned, Ole Miss, a lot of penalties early, 28-5 to 258 in its first three games. They have quieted the penalties and the turnovers as of late. So they're getting better with that. They certainly want that to continue along this line. And listen, and what happens with Lane? I don't, I'll be honest with you, I don't think he stays. And look, that now I know Lane is Lane, but Lane, I give Lane some credit here. Is after his father died, Monty, I think Lane matured some, and we're seeing some of that. Now, there's still, there's no doubt he's enjoying the limelight. I'm not going to say that he's not. It's a very important decision here on what he does. Let's just say he does go to Ole Miss. What would be great would be if he could play, if he could coach Ole Miss through the bowl game, or the bowl game, shall we say, with the playoffs. I think that would be important, but I don't think that's going to happen between the league and also between Ole Miss. So this is of the many storylines with the SEC. This is probably number one of all, but there are plenty to talk about.
Yeah, Mississippi State, to keep this game competitive, in my opinion, has to get it from its run game as much as anything else. Fluff Bothwell, Booth, when we see him, if we see him in the second half of this game. Problem for Mississippi State and why I can't really go there with them is the Bulldogs rank 16th last in the SEC in rushing defense. Kiwon Lacy is not a guy you want to see in this spot.
No.
The outstanding running back, really a slam dunk, all SEC choice, maybe an All American in Kiwon Lacy to go along with Ahmad Hardy of the University of Missouri. Let's keep it right there on Friday. Move out a little bit later in the afternoon from Atlanta, Georgia. The Georgia Bulldogs traveling over to Mercedes-Benz Stadium this time to take on the Yellow Jackets of Georgia Tech. That's a 3:30 Eastern kickoff on ABC. As much as anything last week, I was amazed at how Pitt took apart Georgia Tech at Grant Field. That was shocking to me. It was
Yeah, it
28 to
was.
nothing. You had those two primetime games Saturday night, right? You had Georgia Tech Pitt, and you're thinking, oh, this is going to be on one television. And then I'm going to have Florida and Tennessee on the other television. Well, after about a quarter of play, I didn't have anything to watch anymore because Tennessee was drilling Florida in
Yes.
Gainesville in unprecedented fashion. And then Georgia Tech, inexplicably, with everything on the line, looked like a disinterested football team. Maybe they were maybe there was paralysis by analysis or anxiety because of what was on the line. But boy, Pitt absolutely destroyed Tech. George has been a model of consistency, especially really over these last 4 or 5 weeks. And again, a Georgia team that looks like it's playing its best football at the right time. And that makes it tough to pick against the Dogs, a 13.5-point favorite in Atlanta.
Haynes King continues to play well. I mean, versus Pitt, my goodness, 27-41, 333 total yards, 3 touchdowns and 2 picks. And that's the thing that really hurt them. Tech was interesting early on. They had a lot of turnovers early in the ACC season. That kind of took its course and change and went the other way, and they had very few during that point too. But the thing that happened is in their latest game, they came back up with turnovers again, which, Trav, is really difficult right now, because we can make the argument, could we not, is Georgia the most consistent team in the league
right now?
Yes. I mean, in all phases of the game, we know they're stalwarts defensively. Offensively, they can run the ball as well as anybody in the league is concerned. They've had great success on special teams. I think Tech will be in the game. I think they will play pretty well for a while. Georgia just really is going on all cylinders right now, aren't they, Trev?
They are, and that offensive line is playing as well, in large part because it feels like they've got their guys.
Yes.
They had injuries earlier in the season and missing pieces. Last year, they just weren't very good up front, not by Georgia standards, but they look like they're getting back to that, especially in the run game. Had a chance against a Charlotte team last week to get a lot of people in the football game, kind of rest and get ready for this trip to Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech gave it up on the ground to Pitt too, which is, again, problematic because Georgia has been running the football more like you would expect. If Haynes King throws 40-plus passes again this week, and I love Haynes King, it's not going to end well for Georgia Tech. If you're a Georgia fan right now, you want to see Haynes King into the 40s throwing it. And, you know, he's not a terrible passer, but that's not really who Georgia Tech is on the offensive side of the ball under Brent Key. Let's keep it moving right there on Friday, boy. Noon, 3:30. We go to 7:30. Texas A&M, third-ranked team in the country, just a 2.5-point favorite. Another one of those, one of these home dogs in the Texas Longhorns. 7:30, that's going to be Friday night on ABC. You know, in Austin, it is going to be absolutely nuts this weekend. Texas A&M, Brent, a very narrow favorite in this game. I think for both teams, taking care of the football at the quarterback position. Marcel Reed for Texas A&M, and then Arch for Texas, going to probably determine this game.
Trev, tell me how this is possible. There are 7 SEC teams below A&M in the top 25, and the Aggies haven't played one of them.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. It really is. We've talked about this for a couple of weeks now. This is really the start, in some ways, it feels like, of the Texas A&M season. Now, look, you can't discount that win over Notre Dame.
No,
it's
I
just
agree.
That it was so long ago. But to go into South Bend and win a game like that, you know, it's almost like recruiting. You get a 5-star commitment like a year early, and everybody forgets about that guy because they committed so early. Well, Texas A&M's issue, I guess, was that that win over Notre Dame was too early in the season. But there's no doubt in SEC play, they've been very, very schedule fortunate. That changes, you got to think, this week as the Aggies visit Austin. This is a tough pick for me.
I agree.
I just think, again, I know I keep going back to the run game for these teams, and I think Texas A&M, I like the chances of A&M maybe not putting too much on Marcel Reed in that passing game, which with KC Concepcion and those receivers, Ashton Bethel Roman, the rest of those guys, the tight ends contribute. They're capable of doing it for stretches, But as we saw, even against an FCS opponent in Samford last week, they still got Amari Daniels there at A&M. He had 9 carries for 106 yards. That running back depth from young guys, newcomers to vets, situationally, the way Texas A&M can run the ball, and that's before you include Marcel Reed's legs and all that. I think A&M is going to be a little more well-rounded offensively. And if Wisner and the rest of that run game for Texas can't really kick it in against this Texas A&M front seven, that could put Arch in some tough spots behind that offensive line.
You know, a couple of things about the quarterbacks. If we stopped a bunch of cars, as our friend Greg Larson used to say, on Interstate 95 and said, who leads the SEC in touchdown passes? How many people would say Marcel Reed, Travis?
Well, they probably would have said Ty Simpson, because for a long time it felt like it was going to be Ty, but yeah, you're right.
No. Yeah.
And that goes back to the lack of big stages that A&M's had. You know, I mean, we just the matchups haven't really dictated that we know much about, or the average fan doesn't know much about this A&M team in general. But again, those chances are going to ramp up beginning with Friday night against the Longhorns.
And Trev, real quick, Arch Manning in the last 4 games, 65% completion, averaging 328 per game, 11 passing touchdowns, 2 rushing. He even caught one from last week. So, look, I'm not even saying Texas is going to win the game, but to Arch's credit and their offense, and obviously Steve Sarkisian, their offense has improved as the year has gone along.
You think Sark takes that third down conversion stat for the Texas A&M defense personally?
Yeah.
Texas A&M, this goes back to understanding competition, I'm sure, has something to do with it, although the eye test tells us A&M, very legit. Just 22% opponents are converting third downs against this Texas A&M defense. We'll see what Sark and Arch have in store for the Aggies when those opportunities roll around. Texas on third down hadn't been especially great this season at about 41%. That's 11th in the SEC. Brent, let's move into Friday. Right off the gate, this isn't the sort of time and or network slot you want if you're playing in your rivalry game and it features ACC and SEC sort of crossover. Kentucky at Louisville, that's a noon Eastern game on Saturday. That's the ACC network. So, you know, we'll have to see if your provider has that or you've paid for the extra packages. Louisville really tumbling here of late. Had an issue at the quarterback position. You know, a lot of these coaches like Jeff Brohm and Drink and, you know, I guess even Jed Fish to an extent, lost to Wisconsin a few weeks ago with the Washington Huskies. It almost feels like since the cycle is really ramped up, you know, with candidate lists and things like that, some of these coaches have seen their teams just take precipitous drops. And Louisville's kind of been one of those teams, Brent. Mark Stoops, is this it for him, speaking of the coaching cycle? Right. I guess that's the question here for both these teams as we move forward.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Now, some updates on Louisville. Chris Bell, their wide receiver, looks like he is going to be missing the finale with this. He's done some good work. Miller Moss also has an unspecified injury. Missed last week's game. He's questionable. I would think if he can return by any stretch that he would come back. But, yes, great point. Frankly, on the Kentucky coach, on the Louisville coaching situation with this too. And look, there have been some really good games here in this rivalry. And this may be one of those games again to where, you know, the underdog in these games really kind of stands up from time to time. Kentucky had a 3-game winning streak, go to Nashville, and that was snapped. So I think that's a really great question is, what does Stoops do and Trav with what? I'm not going to say half the SEC, but a decent amount of the SEC looking for coaches. Could we see Stoops returning for another year?
Yeah, it felt a little bit like a death rattle here in the last month, that three game win streak for Kentucky, that last rally, you know, that kind of last gasp. And then to go to Vanderbilt last week and just get absolutely dismantled by a very good Vanderbilt team. But that doesn't resonate. It still doesn't resonate well, even with the Kentucky fan base, understanding what the priorities are first and foremost in Lexington. So I guess it's a big we'll see. Who would you think of these two coaches is most likely to be back with their current employer to start the 2026 season? As we sit here on a Tuesday night heading into the final weekend of the regular season, would you go Mark Stoops at Kentucky or would you go Jeff Brohm at Louisville?
I would say Stoops comes back. Frankly, with this, but I mean, at the same time, I mean, if they've got, you know, if they've got somebody waiting in the wings here, that nothing, I don't think, has gotten out at this point either. And look, and Trav, what they could do is they could make some kind of announcement that Stoops is coming back for one last year type thing to kind of rally the troops, and then have someone in place by the end of the season next year. But my concern for Kentucky would be if they announce he's gone, and unless they've got really somebody waiting in the wings, whoever they get may not even be good as Stoops is.
No, that's the question. And if Kentucky goes to Louisville and wins, on Saturday. And by the way, if they do that, they're bowl eligible. They'll be bowl eligible at 6-6. I like the chances a lot better of Mark Stoops being back. If they go over there and get taken apart, I don't know how you run that back.
I don't either.
And if that, you know, and then that brings into Brohm probably more than anything else. Let's also talk about on Saturday afternoon. Boy, this one has a chance to be a great one in Knoxville, Tennessee. Diego Pavia and the Vanderbilt Commodores traveling to the Smokies to take on the Tennessee Vols. Tennessee just obliterated the Florida Gators. I'm 56 years old and I grew up in Northeast Florida. So I've seen some bad Florida teams, believe it or not. What Tennessee did to Florida and Gainesville, I haven't seen that. I've seen great teams go into Gainesville against bad Florida teams and not do in 30 minutes of football what Tennessee did. So it was a feel-good trip because there were some demons, right? There were exercised on that playing surface Saturday night in Alachua County.
This is a mouthful here, Trav. It was only the Vols' third win in 50 years in Gainesville.
Yeah. It's crazy.
That's just staggering,
historic,
isn't it?
Yeah. Historic win, no doubt about it. And to do it in the fashion that Tennessee did it was pretty amazing. Tennessee kind of went to Nashville, didn't kind of went to Nashville last year and really punched his ticket to the college football playoff over a Diego Pavia quarterbacked Vanderbilt team. Vanderbilt, as we just talked about with Kentucky, feeling really good about itself after pummeling the Wildcats in Nashville last weekend. You know, I think for both these teams, for different reasons, Tennessee, I think in the vertical passing game, can have some opportunities against this Vanderbilt defense. They can spread Vanderbilt out and give Vanderbilt some problems that way. Auburn did it a couple weeks ago. Now, Joey Aguilar isn't Ashton Daniels running the football. He can run it a little bit, but he's not dynamic as a runner. But I think there are some things that Tennessee even did against Vandy in Nashville last season in that Vandy defense that they might be able to replicate in this one.
I take what now we understand where Tennessee is, and they're kind of in between here. Boy, another win for them before now may have put them in the thick of things in the playoff hunt. But Aguilar, the fifth Tennessee quarterback with 3,000 yards. Trev, the other quarterbacks in that bunch, Peyton Manning, Tyler Bray, Eric Ainge, and Hendon Hooker. How about that?
Pretty good group. You know, and now Heupel's had a couple of those guys.
He has, hasn't he?
So, says a lot about him, too, and those weapons. Chris Brazel, Braylon Staley, Mike Matthews, were without Miles Kitzelman, the tight end, last week. You know, they still got a young guy in Ethan Davis that can step up at that position. And both these teams are going to want to run the football
sure. On
Saturday. That's first and foremost what they're going to want to do. And that's where Pavia is sort of the mm-hmm. X factor and what he's able to do with his legs. So should be a great, great football
really
game.
Should be.
It's just impossible, even though the game's in Knoxville, for me to pick against Diego.
Yeah.
But Tennessee got exactly the kind of performance it needed last Saturday on the road, heading into this one with the Commodores. Hey, let's talk about 3:32 on Saturday. It's a big one. A lot of play-in games, not necessarily matchups where the winner between the two teams is in the college football playoff, but you got to advance. You got to survive in advance this weekend. That'll be the case for number 8 Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. Home again after dropping the Missouri Tigers last Saturday. A very retro type of performance. Exactly the way Oklahoma has done it here in the last month. Turn people over. Satania hits an explosive play. Mateer does just enough. And, you know, get the job done with that defense in large part and special teams. I mean, Oklahoma kicks the football as well or better than just about anybody in the country.
Yeah, they really do. Hey, Trev, could this thing be 13-10?
I can definitely see that, especially after watching LSU, which we have deemed the 20-10 Tigers because it feels like every LSU game is like 20-10.
Yeah, it really is.
Last Saturday night against Western mm-hmm. Kentucky, it was 13-10. I heard a crazy stat from that game, by the way, LSU-Western Kentucky, Brent. A stat I heard was – there was a 20-play stretch for LSU against Western Kentucky last Saturday night where LSU did not run the football on offense. 20 Good, offensive man. Plays in a row.
Wow.
And LSU did not run the football against Western Kentucky. And Western Kentucky, one of the worst rush defenses in the country. So if you're telling me, Michael Van Buren, it's your ball game that you got to go win. And about your second or third start at LSU, I like Oklahoma's chances pretty good as a 10-point favorite.
Real quick, my only question about Oklahoma, this is arguably, along with Georgia, the best defense in the league. I know Bama's in there somewhere, too.
Texas A&M.
Yeah, and A&M, obviously, too. But, I mean, the reality is, OU has not had more than 359 yards in a game since September 13th. But, I mean, again, they're winning on defense like the Alabama motivation. They allowed Alabama to make mistakes, and they capitalized on them. And they have had a tremendous year because of that. And, frankly, we saw that against Missouri. This is amazing. The fifth time in six games that OU has been outgained by their opponent, Travis.
Yeah, it's happened all too frequently. And that's why it tells you how opportunistic they've been and how good they've been in terms of taking away the football and not just taking the football away, but setting up that offense where it doesn't need to have 400 or 500 yards. I mean, at 212 against Alabama total. Well, you know, didn't. Short fields all day in Tuscaloosa and in one instance, a no field, you know, a pick six for a touchdown. So that's how you sort of, you know, answer those numbers from that standpoint. So Brent should be, to your point, more of some retro football in Norman on Saturday, a game that could be very, very interesting, has no impact really on anything other than maybe Missouri's place in the bowl pecking order, which there is some interest in that, believe it or not. It's totally overshadowed for the most part by the college football playoff and now the coaching carousel, because certainly Arkansas's involved in that. I know Pete Thamel of ESPN and others have reported that sounds like Arkansas is pretty much in the final stages of finalizing its next head football coach. Missouri, this is one of those games that Eli Drinkwitz, what is he now, 1-10 against top 25 or top 10 teams as Missouri head coach? He doesn't lose these games, though. No. He doesn't lose to 2-9 teams, and that can have some carry with your fan base, although I get the sense some Missouri fans are pretty frustrated with that lack of production against truly quality SEC opponents.
No question about that. And again, for Trev, for like the situation with Bobby Petrino, I mean, he's been on the edge. Now they had, they had even split these games that he's coaching. I can see where they would really take a look at him and see where that could go. But that is certainly not happening. And look, I give them credit. They've looked much better offensively than they did. But Trev, I'm not sure that defense could stop you and me right now.
No, and that's pretty much how they got to where they're at. Because Petrino, these two seasons he's been back, the offense has been really, really good. I mean, they run the football extremely well, but they cannot stop anyone. And Missouri needs to see a defense like that after last week.
Yeah.
You know, Ahmad Hardy's a really good back, but when you think about against the Alabamas and the Oklahomas now, you know, those are defenses that are built to sort of handle a back like him. That's why I would go Kewan Lacy of those two, because Lacy has some shake and make you miss, and he's dynamic, and he can catch it extremely well as a receiver out of the backfield. But this is the kind of game where we might see Ahmad Hardy get back to that 200-plus range when it comes to running the football. I'm with you on Bobby Petrino. I'll say this about Petrino, and I was thinking about it. There's two jobs that are open in the SEC where if I was coming in there, depending on which side of the ball, I guess, is my background.
Yeah.
But let's say I know that Kane Womack, the Alabama defensive coordinator, has been connected to the Arkansas job, and I would be surprised if he were the guy. But just say if it were a defensive guy that got the Arkansas job. If I was that guy, I would say I want to keep Petrino on the offensive side of the ball.
Yes.
And then also, if I'm an offensive guy going into Auburn, DJ Durkin, I'd want to keep around as my defensive coordinator on that side of the ball. It all depends on the background of the coach. But, yeah, I think this is another situation. Missouri, just a 2.5-point favorite. I think that has as much to do with kind of like my sense of Arkansas this season is, how the heck are they winless in the SEC?
Oh, really?
I mean, because like you said, they're in every game, and offensively they have stretches of just beautiful football. But then the catastrophic mistakes.
Yeah.
They didn't leave. No. They didn't leave with Pitt. So it looks inviting as a to take that home dog in the 2.5. But I think I've learned my lesson. I feel like I've learned my lesson on Arkansas this season. Hey, here's a game for you. How about this time slot? 4:30 on Saturday.
Oh, Lord.
Look at the 3:30s on Saturday.
Yeah.
And then look at 4:30 on Saturday. Rough slot with the Seminoles traveling to Florida to take on the Gators. The Gators, one of those programs in search of a head coach, hoping to be the winner of that Lane Kiffin sweepstakes. You know, I talked to a family member in the last couple of days who is a Florida grad, proud Florida grad, lifelong Gator.
Yes.
And even he at this point is like, let's just get it over with, right? You know, if it's Lane, great. But if it's not Lane, you know, let's I think a lot of the fans probably feel that way. They're kind of over it. We heard from Mike Alford and the Florida State administration. Mike Norvell coming back. I don't think that's a huge surprise considering the financial commitment it would require, right?
Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And that's the issue at this point. And again, you know, FSU's Miami, Alabama, Virginia, all 9-2, Wake, Pitt are 8-3, NC State and Clemson are 6-5. But that $54 million buyout for Florida State is something that's a real problem right now. Yeah. And Trav, that the other thing though that really gets ugly, and this is why there's not any excitement from FSU people, Norvell 22-26 in the ACC.
Yeah, that's not going to work. And that Florida State loss at NC State last Friday night was just, you think about how teams get into ruts of losing.
Yes. Yes.
And you get an opportunity late in the game and you have two muffs punts on back-to-back punts late in the football game. And that Alabama win seems so long ago. It doesn't seem as long ago to Alabama, though, because it feels like that loss for Alabama continues to bite the Crimson Tide in the butt. It's like the selection committee, Alabama fans, they've all done their best to forget about that season opening loss. Yeah. At Florida State, but doesn't feel like the committee is forgetting about it all that much. You know, this is truly a pick 'em, Brent. You just go with the team you think might give a damn, I guess, the most at the end of the day.
Yeah, really.
And that's sort of a hard pick. The same Florida fan said to me that he's hopeful this week because it seems like every other week the Gators show up. You know,
Show up
for Georgia, then get their doors blown off by Kentucky, okay? Show up for Ole Miss, then get their doors blown off at home by Tennessee. So this week, this is the week that they show up and maybe beat the rival Seminoles down in Gainesville. The Iron Bowl at night, Brent. What about that? Alabama is a 5.5-point favorite. Another one of these home dogs in the Auburn Tigers. 7:30 Eastern on ABC Saturday night. What's intriguing, fascinating about this matchup is what we will know at the time that game kicks off. Think about everything we just talked about.
Yeah, good point.
Conference.
Yes.
From Friday all through Saturday. We're going to know exactly. It's still going to mean everything for Alabama. Mm-hmm. But in terms of for the league as a whole, what it might mean for the college football playoff, it's going to be heavy at 7:30 Eastern Saturday night.
Well, there's no doubt about that. And to go along with that, Trav, my understanding is by the time they get to the fourth quarter, the temperature may be in the 30s.
Yeah.
So that is something to keep in mind. Also, I think the thing with this, and look, the voodoo aside here, how does Alabama handle this opportunity? And I think some of this is going to be mental, frankly. So, do we see some improvement in Ty at quarterback? Can the offensive line protect him? Can Bama get some semblance of a running game here? Now, Josh Quavis, unless you've heard differently, I think it's going to probably be out for the game.
That sounds good for Alabama's starting tight end, who is a real key piece to that.
Really is. Yeah. Really is. There is no question about that. Now look, I don't think this will happen, but I'm just throwing it out just for, to examine it. Trav, if Simpson, for whatever reason, in the cold, if you just can't get it done, and that's a close game in the fourth quarter, would we see Austin Mack or Keelon Russell I didn't think we would, but it was interesting how they did last week in the win in Tuscaloosa.
Yeah, it was good to see the young quarterbacks if you're an Alabama fan. I thought Austin Mack, Keelon Russell did some nice things. I think Alabama played five quarterbacks. I talked about this earlier in the week on the channel. That's the thing about Kalen DeBoer. If you're a walk-on,
really,
you better be strapped up and ready to go in a game like that one against Eastern Illinois. Eastern Illinois game told us nothing, really. I was very impressed with Deuce Knight in terms of his playmaking ability at the quarterback position, but it was still Mercer. I know Mercer's a solid to really good FCS. I think a lot of this for Alabama is going to have to go back to its defense because that's the one area of that football team that's trending in a positive direction. Because it's not Ty Simpson's play of late.
No.
I don't think he's been awful, but the ball security has been awful.
Yes.
In between that, which is kind of a big thing, obviously, we've still seen some good things from him. You know, Jeremy Bernard, the different ways that they can use him on offense, I think that will be big this week. I think you'll see Jeremy Bernard line up outside, inside, backfield, hand it to him, throw it to him. He might even throw it some. I think Ryan Grubb, Alabama's offensive coordinator, isn't going to leave anything in the bag. And I think a young tight end like Caleb Edwards, maybe even Marshall Pritchett, another freshman, they're going to have to step forward. If Quavis is in fact out, you know, they like to utilize that tight end. They like to utilize multiple tight ends. I think Ty Simpson's legs may be more so than at any point so far this season, because he is athletic enough to at least keep a defense more honest. That's one thing they haven't probably done enough of this year.
True.
When they run it, you know, they've mixed it up. They get Bernard involved. You know, they'll run some reverses, things like that. But the quarterback dynamic of the run game hasn't been there. I think this week, if you need to dial it up 7 to 10 times for him, that's the key. I think for Auburn, you know, with Hugh Freeze gone, it's like the shackles have come off offensively. Now, you know, again, it was Mercer last week. But you go back to the Auburn-Vanderbilt game, Ashton Daniels looked like a Heisman Trophy finalist.
They spread
the field. They went tempo. Cobb is still one of the best three or four backs or most productive backs in the SEC. They've had a significant injury right there in the middle of their offensive line. It looks like they've settled in now to that, had a few weeks to try to figure that out. And then defensively, you know what, DJ Durkin's going to come after you too. So you're going to have some opportunities to beat it. But what we saw against Oklahoma, I kind of compare the two defenses, Oklahoma and Auburn. Alabama moved the football, ran the football pretty well against Oklahoma, actually. So if they can run it for around 100 yards and then throw it to the backs and get something out of Ty Simpson with his legs, they'll probably be okay in this game. I think the first 8 to 10 minutes down there Saturday night will
tell
you a whole lot. And I think that's where it's going to be probably as much on the Alabama defense to legitimize this extended stretch of fine play that we've seen.
Trem, I'm just wondering, and I don't want to look too far ahead, but if Alabama's able to win this game and they go to the SEC championship game, that's kind of the understanding if they win. Would even a loss in the championship game – now, the rhetoric that we heard in the preseason was, well, if you get two teams in the championship game, regardless of the score – they both ought to be able to go to the playoffs, but and this may take some Greg Sankey, a little motivation for this committee. But I'm just throwing that out there right now. Would the committee continue to live up to what they said about two teams being in the playoffs, or in the their championship together? That would make a difference. So I'm going to be curious how that goes.
Yeah, they were kind of pressed on that last week, I thought. And the answer from Hunter Yurecek was, well, it'll be a measuring point. Measuring points. That didn't sound like a steadfast qualifier. And look, 2018, I guess it was a 4-team playoff. Georgia lost a game it should have won against Alabama and Atlanta in the SEC championship game. I believe Georgia got left out of that playoff. And again, it was four teams, but you walked away from the Mercedes-Benz Stadium that day saying to yourself, Georgia's one of the four best teams in the country.
Didn't matter.
And now, you know, the conferences and all that were different too. And kind of the commitment you had to have to that. But I think again, it's to be determined. I wouldn't put too much faith either way. And there's other things that are going to happen around the country.
Sure. You know,
there's games Saturday, like Oregon at Washington, that no one's talking about, in large part because Oregon looked pretty good against Southern Cal out in Eugene last Saturday. You never know what might happen. Oregon's seventh ranked team in the country could go to Seattle and get beat. You know, I mean, so we'll see how some other things go. I don't trust. We talk about committees from 2 or 3 years ago that may or may not have put things out there on the record, but it's all about this committee, right?
Sure is.
Committees change. So there's not sort of this, again, hard and fast written sort of situation. But back to this Iron Bowl, and Ashton Daniels, just a huge piece to this, not only with his arm, but with his legs. And that's why I think for Alabama, it starts with the Auburn run game. You've got to kill Cobb, and then you've got to limit explosive runs by Daniels. I know everybody's talking about Deuce Knight right now, but I expect it to be Ashton Daniels unless he just goes on a turnover barrage. Yeah. And that's what you have to try to do if you're Alabama, is limit that run game as best you can from the outset, and then make Ashton Daniels, even with those wide receivers, you know, and they're Cam Coleman, the rest of those guys, legit. But you got to make Ashton Daniels beat you throwing the football if you're Alabama. And you know what else for Alabama? You don't want it to come down to a kick late.
Oh mercy. No.
Been some struggles for Connor Thalty lately. Ooh. And I'll say this, Alex McPherson for Auburn, who's been through so much physically and health-wise, give that young guy a lot of credit, man. Mm-hmm. He has turned it around, and he is kicking the football almost as well as his older brother, Evan, who kicks for the Cincinnati Bengals. So a couple of areas where Auburn is trending and Alabama isn't. And I think that's why that 5.5 right there will probably continue to come down as we move through the week.
Yeah. I agree. Just humongous games for the league. It's difficult to see that it's come down to this. It seems like the season has flown by in a lot of ways, but, when we talk next week, there'll be a lot more that we'll know. And my source, Trav, we got to have more going on that in the coaching carousel that we'll know by then, too.
Oh, we will. And your Heisman vote will start to really narrow down. From the league perspective, Brent, I mean, who is it that you think a lot of your fellow voters are? Is it Diego's ball right now? Because it looks like – it looks like a Big Ten quarterback or a Notre Dame running back at this point.
Yeah. I would agree with that too. But I'll throw a guy out there, Travis, that to me has improved tremendously. I'm not saying he's going to win it, but will Gunnar Stockton get some appreciation with this situation?
Based on his team's performance and the way he has played since Alabama.
Yes.
I would say so. For me, though, Diego would be at the top of that list.
Yeah, I agree.
But then Stockton, and then, you know, Kewan Lacy, someone like that. It's crazy because we haven't even mentioned Ty Simpson. And just a couple weeks ago, Ty Simpson was a top three, pretty much slam dunk. It shows you, though, why Brent and others, the smart voters anyway, hang on to that vote.
Got to do
until
it.
Until after Southeast, after championship weekend, before they cast that ballot. Hey, Brent, always a lot of fun. Anything else before we get out of here on a Tuesday night?
Trav, we haven't even mentioned it, and I'll be brief on it, but another Ohio State-Michigan game around the corner now. And Trav, I saw today – the boys may be expecting a couple inches of snow on the ground up there.
Well, how about that? I mean, it kind of have to for Ohio really State does, Michigan in Ann Arbor, doesn't it? I mean, it has to be that way.
Yeah.
And you know what? Michigan's been kind of laying low. Hasn't really been in any spotlight games of late. And we talked about some demons, like Tennessee exercised in Gainesville over the weekend. That's a big one for Ryan Day.
It is.
On Saturday on the big noon kickoff.
And let me mention this. So people haven't heard this real quick. And I think this is a wise decision. The College Football Playoff Committee has extended their deadline from December the 1st of this year to January 23rd of next year. Okay, this is about what are they going to do next year. They've kind of reached an impasse. I understand they're making progress with this, but basically what this is talking about is, are we going from 12 to 16, and how quickly are we going to do this? I would think that they would be able to work some stuff out by January the 23rd, and they would know that. But look, Trav, you and I both know the money is just too good to give up, correct?
Well, yeah, for sure.
And the sooner they can get in there, and you know, the Big Ten wants, I'm being facetious here, the Big Ten wants to have about 30 of them, right, involved with it. Well, look, I 12 is good. You know, I think, and look, I know it's going to change, but I think 16, maybe where we need, if we go there, we need to keep it there for several years and be able to preserve the regular season. But you and I both know, brother, money talks. And if we go to 16, it won't be long to go beyond that, will it?
Probably not. Probably.
Oh, not. And Trev, before we go, I think folks need a, they need a pumps update as we come into a very pivotal weekend.
Well, we'll be reconvening with Pops for the Thanksgiving holiday over at his lovely West Side abode.
Yeah.
So we'll see how that goes. He's really mellowed in the last couple of years. You know, he turned 78 years old next month. So he's an old dog that he's pretty much on the porch. You'll find him on that front porch swing more often than not. But he still has that. He has that one last run in him.
He does.
You know, where a family gathering could get sideways, could get in the ditch. So we always have to kind of have to keep an eye on him.
Yeah. I understand that.
All right, my man.
Particularly if his Gators get someone that excites him, I could see a little more energy in him then.
The Gators don't. I mean, he's disconnected. You know, it's like he's desensitized.
At
this point, you know, anything short of Steven or Spurrier jumping back into the saddle down there isn't going to get his blood pumping much anymore. He's kind of over that at this point. Now he likes that Gator basketball.
He likes
that Gator basketball. He's big on that. But
All right,
my man, Brent, always a lot of fun. Hope you have a great Thanksgiving holiday, my man. What is the side of choice? Because that's a big topic this week. One side, you can pick one side option for Thanksgiving dinner, Brent. What is the go-to? What's the favorite?
Well, I'm probably going to say macaroni and cheese would probably be it. Now broccoli's good too, but between the two, I would say that's probably if you can make the macaroni and cheese right, the rest of it goes fine.
Yeah, that seems to be it. You know, it's definitely the casserole Olympics, right? The sides. I mean,
yeah, really.
Sweet potato casserole, green bean casserole.
Yeah,
my favorite is probably hash brown casserole.
Yeah,
it's a family recipe. You know, it's just basically potatoes with a lot of cheese, cream, and some cornflakes on top of all things. You bake that on there, get that crunch. Oh, yes. I'll go hash brown casserole.
And I'm sure there'll be a lot of wisdom from one Chris Ryer, too, during the during the next few days. Is it possible?
Yeah. Well, that's why we say the blessing. It's for Chris. You know, it's not even the food as much as if we just pray for Chris. But anyway. Yeah. All right, Brent. A lot of fun as always. Hope each and every one of you out there, by the way, have a safe and joyous Thanksgiving holiday. Enjoy it. Be safe out there. And keep it right here on Ryer on YouTube. We'll be back with more Second Helping next week. We have a myriad of programming options on the network as well. For Brent Beard, Travis Ryer, thanking you again. Until next time, so long, everybody.